Hey, listeners, I know it's been a while. Life has been, well, lifing, and the year has been full of so many highs and lows, with triumphs and losses in equal measure. And it's been a real struggle to keep my wits about me and keep myself on task. So I want to thank you for continuing to rock with this podcast, because many of the victims' cases are still open, and some of those calls to action still remain. So when I see how many people continue to listen to the podcast, even though I haven't put out any new episodes, it really warms my heart, because I want to believe that everyone listening wants to help. So thank you. Anyway, all this lifing had me doing a lot of thinking about life in general and what it has to offer. You know, the ways in which things ebb and flow. And it seems to me that there are so many tiny moments of personal joy, even when I've experienced something terrible or difficult or just plain fucked up. I know that another day lived is another chance to get it right, and eventually things will get better. But then I realized that very thought is a privilege that most of the women and girls I've talked about on this podcast will never be able to have. They have been robbed of their human experience, and I just weep about it. It's especially difficult when I talk about the children, like the one in today's episode. Zion was just 17 years old when her life was stolen. Someone known and trusted took her life. So brace yourself, because this episode may make you clutch your babies a little tighter and look more carefully at those around you. I'm Renetta Rideout, and this is Misogynoir Murders. It was a typical wintry Tuesday night on January 4th, 2022, in East Point, a suburb of Detroit, Michigan. 17-year-old Zion Foster had just gotten off work from her job at the Detroit Wing Company around 10 p.m. Zion's boyfriend picked her up from work like usual and dropped her off at home, where she lived with her mom and five younger siblings. Before even changing out of her work clothes, she asked her mom if she could hang out with her 23-year-old cousin, Jalen. Yeah, it was late, around 10:45 p.m., but this wasn't out of the ordinary, and there hadn't been a problem before. Jalen was a trusted member of the family, and he was Zion's favorite cousin on her dad's side. She even saved him in her phone as Favo. So yes, Zion was allowed to go. A short while later, Jalen pulled his white Acura sedan into Zion's neighbor's driveway, where he waited for Zion to come out of her house. Sierra thought it was a little weird that Jalen parked his car in the neighbor's driveway, but it wasn't something she dwelled on. So Zion said her goodbyes and left with Jalen. They drove to his house in Detroit, which is about 21 minutes southwest of East Point. When the cousins arrived at Jalen's house, Zion texted Sierra her exact location, which was a regular practice whenever Zion was away from home. At 12:59 a.m., in the early hours of January 5th, Sierra received a text from Zion's phone that she was on her way home. Sierra knew it would take about 20 minutes for Zion to get home, so she waited up for her. But those 20 minutes came and went, and soon turned into 40 minutes, and then an hour, and Zion still wasn't home. At this point, a red flag went up in Sierra's mind, because this was completely uncharacteristic of Zion's behavior. She'd never told her mom before that she'd be on her way home and then not show up. This was the first time and the only time that had happened. So, concerned, Sierra called Zion's phone. She didn't want to panic, but that's exactly what began to happen when call after call went straight to Zion's voicemail, indicating the phone was turned off. Now Sierra knew something was wrong, and she knew that with Zion's phone being off, her location could not be tracked. With each unanswered phone call, unease took root in her mom's mind. The next logical step was to call Jalen to see what happened. But before she could call him, he was calling her. Jalen told Sierra that he didn't know why Zion would lie and involve him in this, and he hadn't seen her in years. Obviously, Sierra was taken aback by this and confused by his crazy talk, and now she was convinced that whatever happened to Zion and wherever she was, Jalen definitely had something to do with it. Why else would he make up some elaborate story about how he hadn't seen Zion in years? Sierra wasted no time at all and went straight to the East Point Police Department to file a missing persons report. She told the police that Zion had been with her cousin and hasn't been seen or heard from since. She reported everything that happened up till that point. Zion texting, saying that she was on her way home and not showing up. Then Jalen's bizarre phone call. Everything was reported. But despite all of this information that clearly indicates that Zion disappeared under suspicious circumstances at least, not much immediately happened in terms of an investigation for at least a week that I can tell based on news reports I've read. In fact, 6 days after Zion disappeared, on January 10th, ABC WXZ Detroit News quoted Sierra as saying that it would be another 72 hours before someone would be assigned to Zion's case, and that she didn't feel like East Point PD was taking Zion's disappearance seriously. And no wonder she felt that way, having waited nearly a week already. Supposedly, the slow process of the case assignment is what was to blame for the delay. But to me, this just sounds like more of the same, and the police wasted precious time by classifying Zion as a runaway. I can't even begin to express how much this melts my ice cream, because we all know how absolutely critical it is for law enforcement to immediately investigate when a child goes missing. I totally understand that kids do run away, and yeah, searching for them is taxing on resources. But a child is still a child and cannot legally disappear themselves like adults can. Now, to be fair, Zion had run away from home before, but she just stayed with a friend, and it was almost a whole year prior. It was a very short stint during which Zion kept in touch with her family every single day, and she never missed one day of school. So immediately, this should have been another sign to police that something terrible happened to Zion. But again, they just brushed her aside. I can't get over the fact that this is just another demonstration of that biased, racist, sexist, elitist bullshit. Zion deserved every ounce of attention that many white, wealthy teen girls across America get when they go missing, and everyone knows it. But time and time again, I say the same thing about these cases. How conveniently folks forget about all the studies, analyses, and statistics that are continuously commissioned and discussed that prove the system is biased against Black women and girls. And yet, nothing systemically changes. At this point, we just gotta accept that this awful trend is intentional. But I digress. Now, unlike the police, Sierra and her family hired a private investigator to start investigating immediately. Sierra herself went to Jalen's house multiple times questioning him, and every single time they talked, his story changed. At first, he said he hadn't seen Zion in 3 years. Then it went to 2 years, and then to just 8 months. Meanwhile, there was plenty of proof that Jalen and Zion had been hanging out pretty regularly for months. Jalen's ever-changing story was a clear sign that he was hiding something, but it didn't matter that Sierra didn't buy what he was selling because he continued to lie to her face. And even though her gut told her he was involved, Sierra really wanted to just trust Jalen because, after all, he was family. It was hard to fathom that a family member would be involved in Zion's disappearance, so Sierra tried to push those feelings of unease down. And Jalen even helped Sierra post flyers and posters about Zion on his street where he lived. Meanwhile, days pass and there's still no sign of Zion or any clues about what happened to her. Zion's family hunted down leads left and right, hoping to find her. And some of those leads were good, like the one from someone who said they saw Zion at a gas station not far from Jalen's house. I do wonder about this one, but I never read that this was a confirmed sighting because her mom expected the commute to be about 20 minutes, which it was. So I don't think that Zion and Jalen had time to stop at the gas station, but at least this was a lead that police could investigate. Other so-called tips were just plain bad. People were taking what they'd seen on the news and then calling the tip line to report their air quotes tip. One person claimed they knew Zion was being held by a human trafficker and actually scammed Sierra out of $200 for information about that. Another piece of shit actually demanded $7,000 for information. $7,000. Really? You know, I don't think I will ever get used to the fact that there are really people out there who scam other people during the worst moments of their lives. All I can say about that is that people are really evil out there. Anyway, thankfully, the East Point Police and the Detroit Police Department finally made their appearance and stopped the family from being victimized further. By Wednesday, January 12th, the police were knocking on the doors of friends, relatives, and anyone else Zion was prone to kick it with, including her boyfriend, who was not a suspect or a person of interest in Zion's disappearance, by the way. On the contrary, this young man assisted the investigation when he provided Zion's dad, James, with text messages he'd received from Zion after she arrived at Jalen's house. In James's mind, those text messages helped prove that Zion was in fact at Jalen's house before she disappeared. James told Macomb Daily that even though the police were doing all that could be done, he still didn't feel like enough was happening to quickly locate Zion and bring her back. So they considered offering a reward in hopes that would motivate someone with information to come forward. But I can only assume the family was advised to hold off on the reward since I couldn't find any official announcement that a reward had been put up. That could have been because the police had information or evidence that led them to believe there wasn't a need for a reward because on January 19th at 4:35 p.m., they announced they actively sought Jalen as an obvious person of interest. Turns out there was video footage of Jalen picking Zion up from her house, just like her mother said. In the video, you can see Jalen's car pull into Zion's neighbor's driveway. Obviously, the evidence didn't do much to support his stupid stories, and police really wanted to talk to him. But the problem was, Jalen had gone MIA. So, they did the next best thing and advised law enforcement personnel to be on the lookout for Jalen's vehicle. Well, they found the car, but not Jalen. But then, the next thing anyone knew, there was a huge announcement that an arrest had been made in Zion's case. Just a few short hours later, on January 19th, Jalen walked into a local Detroit police precinct, shocking everyone. Detectives questioned him for a while, wanting to flesh out every single detail of his account about what happened after he picked up Zion. Now, from what I could piece together from multiple sources, Jalen told police that after he and Zion got to his house, they smoked weed together, and she put her head back and died. In another version of this story, Macomb Daily reported that Jalen said he left the room for about 10 to 15 minutes, and when he came back, he found Zion deceased. In either scenario, Jalen's story is raising a lot of red flags. The biggest problems are that 1, his story keeps changing, and 2, No matter how many times it changes, there are major holes in his narrative. Jalen said he panicked and didn't know what he should do. Yeah, this 23-year-old father of two didn't know what to do. He claims he was so scared to death about being arrested. And so in his panic, he decided that the best thing he could do for Zion is to put her in the trunk of his car and dispose of her like trash in a dumpster in a neighborhood outside of his community. Yeah. And he expects us to believe Zion just died from a little hit of weed? Give me a break. Even if one could believe Zion suddenly died, the fact that he got rid of her body sends the message of guilt. Top all of that off with the fact that Jalen consistently lies only makes investigators sure Jalen had something to do with her death. The problem was, they couldn't prove it. What they have now is a lot of compelling circumstantial evidence, which can't guarantee a homicide conviction. However, that didn't stop investigators from getting Jalen however they could. On January 2nd, Jalen was arrested for lying to investigators. Lieutenant Martin Campbell told Kiara Hay for WXYZ Channel 7 News that, quote, "Our detectives uncovered some inconsistencies with the stories he's giving, so they were able to obtain a warrant," end quote. Lieutenant Campbell went on to say that Jalen was actually supposed to be released when he first came to the police station. You know, they were just expecting to have a conversation and they wanted to hope that that would be the end of it. But he started lying, and due to his faulty stories that couldn't be corroborated, he was arrested instead. Zion's family weren't the least bit surprised by Jalen's arrest because they knew in their hearts and minds that he was responsible for whatever happened to Zion. In their eyes, the police are Johnny-come-lately, and as much as they wanted to be happy about the arrest, they couldn't because Zion was still missing. Every second that ticked by was another reminder to her family that she probably would not be coming home, and Jalen was the reason why. On January 24th, Jalen was officially charged with 2 counts of perjury in the 38th District Court in East Point for lying to a police officer during a violent crime. Of course, he denied the charges, as stated by his attorney, Matthew Licata, but at this point, Jalen had 0 credibility left. There was also a pending homicide charge out of the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, but spokesperson Kim Worthy said that no suspect was named and the homicide charge was actually rejected due to insufficient evidence. Jalen was held on a $250,000 bond and sent back to jail to await his February court date. With Jalen behind bars, this gave detectives of the Detroit Police Department a chance to continue looking for Zion and any evidence that could be used to hold Jalen accountable for her death. On February 16th, Jalen pleaded no contest and thus forfeited a trial and moved straight to sentencing. His lawyer's strategy, if you can call it that, was if Jalen no longer denied the charges, maybe the judge would be lenient and decide to not give him any jail time at all. The absolute unmitigated gall to hope for such a thing is beyond me, and thankfully Macomb Circuit Judge Edward Servito snuffed out all hope of that nonsense on March 30th. It was at this sentencing hearing that the public first heard that Zion's body was believed to be buried under 100 feet of trash in the Lenox Township landfill. Jalen's statement lasted for more than 7 minutes, and yet he never once divulged specific details about that night. It also wasn't lost on me that he boo-hooed over the consequences he faced more than he did about what happened to Zion. The fact that she was dead and he was the one responsible for her safety was like an afterthought to him. To be honest, He sounded like the typical unaccountable predator who refuses to take responsibility and is frankly living in La La Land. Listening to his ramblings and selfish tears really just pissed me off. The judge, on the other hand, was just appalled. Judge Servito was shocked that Jalen's first thought was to get rid of Zion's body and not to call for help. In the eyes of the court, Jalen needed to be punished, even if it wasn't for the murder right now. It was decided then that Jalen would, in fact, go to prison for the maximum time of 4 years for lying to police during the investigation of Zion's disappearance. Following the sentencing, there was a huge cloud that hung over the investigation, and that cloud was that all hope of finding Zion alive and well had been dashed, and now police had the huge task of finding Zion's body in the landfill. During a May 12 press conference with Sierra and several other partners, Detroit Police Chief James White announced that Operation Zion was officially on. The goal was simple: to locate Zion's remains, and 70 searchers had been enlisted to dig in the city's waste in an effort to recover her body. Not only did Zion's parents want their daughter found so she could be buried properly, but everyone wanted an autopsy performed to determine her actual cause of death so that Jalen could catch the homicide charge he deserves. Unfortunately, months had already passed, and the odds of finding Zion's body at all were slim to none, but authorities set out to find her regardless. As I was watching the press conference, I couldn't help to think that this massive effort during the May heat of the approaching summer could have and should have been avoided if only police had just started the investigation sooner. They would have known where her body was earlier, and the odds of finding her would have been greater. But now, they were forced to do this months into the decomposition process under mounds of trash. Again, this is a prime example of why it's so important for authorities to take missing persons cases of Black teens seriously. Yeah, they wouldn't have been able to save Zion's life, that's true, but they damn sure could have recovered her body intact. The search was extended through most of October. However, on October 23rd, 2022, the search officially ended, having cost nearly $500,000 and 5 months of dedicated searching. Although searchers were eventually able to localize the search area to a particular section of the landfill, where a piece of mail led them to believe they were looking in the right area, Zion's remains were not recovered. It is a bitter pill to swallow for everyone, but especially her family. Now police are back to the drawing board of trying to find any other evidence or leads that might lead to charges being brought against Jalen, or anyone for that matter, who could have been involved in Zion's death. After all, we don't really have a complete picture because Jalen obviously is not a reliable source. When it's all said and done, I truly hope in the not-so-distant future, new evidence will surface and Zion's family can finally get the answers they need and Zion can get the justice she deserves. As always, thanks for listening. Be sure to follow the show on Instagram and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Be well and stay safe out there, folks, and we'll meet here again for the next episode of Misogynoir Murders.
This is a Savvy Sounds production, written and produced by Renetta Rideout.